they have a certain lightness and clarity to their work, which has lasted for thousands of years. Socrates certainly had it, Plato had it, even Aristotle, who was a little bit duller than the other guys, he had some of this. Euclid, Archimedes, lots of mathematicians in the early days had this too. Why? Because they were Pythagoreans. Almost all mathematicians that made an impact in the first 1,000 years after Pythagoras called themselves Pythagoreans. Now, there's a lot of arguments about what he actually did, what he actually accomplished, what his, you know, we don't have any clear records, so I'm not going to make those arguments. But I think it's very clear if you look at what was accomplished and you take all of the tangential lines and move them backwards, they all converge on one line. That line is Pythagoras. Now, there are a lot of other people that contributed tremendously to ancient Greek culture. But I think if you had not had this enthusiasm for what I'm about to describe, what he did, I don't think you would have had Pericles 100 years later. You had the base on which that was built had come from something. One of the ideas, which I think is very, very clearly a Pythagorean idea, is certainly seen in all the art that we've seen before, here that's been going over and everything, there's something different about classical art than modern art, or many other forms of art at different times. And I think you can define it as one thing, and that is classical art is based upon an idea that reality is beautiful. And that is a very unusual idea. Even an idea in ancient Greece was not an unusual idea, but the whole Olympian pantheon is based upon the idea that it all came out of chaos. Chaos is not the idea of beauty. Cosmos is the idea of beauty. Cosmos is a word that Pythagoras made up of the order and harmony of the universe. So he was a man who looked at things differently. Why did he look at them differently? Well, I think we'll talk about that a little bit. But basically, that concept that reality is beautiful leads to a very enthusiastic idea about life. For example, if you think that life is ugly and all suffering, you don't tend to be as enthusiastic about waking up every morning as you do if you think that it's beautiful in some way or other. If you look at classical art, not only do they attempt to make things beautiful, but they also attempt to make things harmonious. Harmony is another big idea that is very clearly goes right back to the pantheon. So he is extremely influential from an idea point of view. We won't try to figure out exactly what he did and what he didn't do. There are a couple of things that we can say he didn't do go into that a little bit later. But I think now they're all back to lunch. We'll take a little walk back in ancient Greece again since we came back into and Athens, as everybody knows, up in this section of town. Now, if you go over here, there's an island called Samos. This is sort of big island right up here off the west side of the Turkish coast. Samos is where Pythagoras was born. But, and I won't spend any time on this because Mark's lecture and your slides are so perfect. But what you see on the Acropolis is harmony, mathematics, and beauty. All Pythagorean ideas. Now, it doesn't mean that the people in Pericles haven't called themselves Pythagoreans. Most of them probably didn't. But the cultural ideal was there, and everybody was running with it. One example of Athena. And Mark, you had actually a better slide and everything, but it wasn't quite, one thing to know about the art and the architecture of time, it wasn't quite what we see now that stripped down, you know, bare marble and all that, but it was very colorful. It wasn't this abstract classical ideal that we all like to think about, because we think about it in classical ideals in that way, because that's the way the ideas are, that's the way the philosophy is. But the art was a blueprint the way most artists. Now, in Nashville, Tennessee, they made a copy of part of it, and I'm sure some of you have seen it in Nashville. And they have a copy of the Athena, and that's what it looks like now. That would be rather impressive if you walked in. Obviously, it's the kind of thing that you probably have in Indiana Jones movie at the end of a great escape of some kind. But Nashville was very intelligent when they built built their copy of the Parthenon and their copy of the Athena. Well, they didn't use Novo or not would have been complaining. And they used that instead of marble. So I think it was gone into, but maybe not in complete detail. The Parthenon and the Apocalypse, the cost, what we call them, billions and billions of dollars today to build in 15 years. And most of the money was invested, by therapy. From the fund of all the different Athenian city-states that had to contribute to their military support. That's where the money came from. As Pericles said, well, we're keeping the Persians away. It doesn't matter whether we're doing anything or not. And if we don't have to do anything to do it, then we can use the money. So we move from Athens 100 years back in time to Samos, this island. Now, Pythagoras did a lot of traveling in his life. There's a lot of stories about all kinds of travels he did, which are probably not true. But the travels he did were not so impossible. First, his father was a trader, a Phoenician trader, and therefore was not in Oklahoma all the time. And he traveled from Samos to Miletus, which is an island just about 50 miles away. And in Miletus, there were two philosophers before the word philosopher was used, Thales and his student, Anaximander. And they were still alive when Pythagoras was a boy or a young man. And he had to travel there and study. And then he went to Egypt, studied in Egypt. Apparently, according to legend, Thales told him he ought to do that because that's what Thales had done. So some things are not ashamed to change the professors and their students. I did it, and I performed well, and I think you can too. So, and the next place he went to was Babylon. There are some stories that he went to Babylon because there was a fight between the Babylonians and the Egyptians, and he was carried away as a slave, and then made himself, you know, well known in Babylon as well. Very hard to understand, but I mean, those stories are true. But it's not that great a distance to travel. It's about 750 miles from Samos to Thebes. It's about 750 miles from Thebes to Babylon, and then maybe 1,000 miles back home. So you have 10 years or 15 years or longer. You certainly could do it at any time. And so it's not at all an impossible story. This is a picture, a little clip of the school of Athens by Raphael. One of the famous pictures of Pythagoras. Obviously, you know, done 2,000 years after he was born. But in the school of Athens, which is in the Vatican, Raphael painted all the secular paintings that the Catholic Church thought were acceptable. Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, all the ones that they allowed into the limbo, as somebody was saying the other day. you can't go to heaven, you know, but we're not going to make you suffer because we borrow so many of your ideas, I guess, it's sort of like being a copyright piece. This is a nice bust of Pythagoras. Now I'll tell you a little bit about it. Find out how much time I have. So Pythagoras' story. First of all, it's very clear that, first of all, civilization is based upon everybody making a contribution. Now, obviously, Pythagoras' contribution was a little bigger than others, but I don't mean to state it out of proportion. It seems to me that out of the billions and billions of people on the planet, everybody gets their 2 cents in for being civilization. And I think that the outstanding characters probably get about 3 cents. So, we'll say that Pythagoras' 3 cents and the influence they have to do with the mathematical ideas that he had, this idea of the harmony of the spheres, an astronomical idea which I'll go into a little bit later when I do my Pythagorean role. Another idea he had was the brotherhood of man, that mankind is just a brotherhood, and that brotherhood is how we're all connected. Obviously, he didn't travel. And you can see that this idea, that maybe they had good brothers, maybe they had bad brothers. But I sometimes wonder about that. If they had bad brothers, it might be more a better explanation for why he came up with the idea that mankind is a brotherhood. But the idea that there was a brotherhood of mankind is certainly one of the base ideas that helped the city states get together to define themselves and move against the Persians. At least a local brotherhood. And he had ideas about the sun, astronomical ideas. He came up with this idea that Arcturus appears, an idea that even the planets revolving around the Earth or the sun try to give you an explanation of how he might have come up with that idea. But I wanted to explain one thing, and that is this idea of all is nothing is a profound idea. And it sounds like weird because everything is a number, we know that. But it sounds like something that seems abstract and mystical, and 150 years later, Plato had the idea that everything was based on eternal ideas. Eternal ideas are these great abstract forms, and they're perfect and they're beautiful, and this world, which we know is not so beautiful, but we really want it to be beautiful, is sort of a bad copy of that perfect set of ideas. Well, that is a direct descendant of this idea of all this number of perfections. And the descendant today is the concept. Now, my analogy is the first amphibian animal that walked out of the water was still wet. When he got out and got on land, started walking around, he was still wet from the water and he was very heated. Stratus and Plato were still wet from the environment that they came from, which was this mystical society and not very much reason. And they were reasoners, but of course they're going to take some of that with them. But now we're all used to it, saying, well, why didn't he just say concept? And they reason, well, you know, it takes a while for an invention to come to its clarity, to really get in focus on this. I think after 25 years, philosophy is just getting started. For example, an analogy for in science is the person who invented the car probably did not have brake lines. But after a while, you learn that brake lines would be a really good addition to your invention. So I think that's the way the idea moved at Pythagoras, the being one step behind Plato, and moving towards this great enthusiasm for reason and what it can do now. I always have a role for you. How much to imagine yourself, some of you are older people do this, but I want you to imagine yourself as Pythagoras' mother. Now, the reason I choose that is because Pythagoras taught women. Pythagoras taught women his ideas. He brought them into a secret society. He taught them about math. He taught them science. You know, in his secret society, it was, don't tell anybody, but A squared plus B squared equals C squared. You know, it wasn't exactly the same kind of ideas that we were definitely, but those ideas were just as revolutionary and just as overthrowing of the current religious ideas as anything else. And of course, that all gets in trouble, so he kept it secret. But he taught a lot of women, and his wife and his daughters were all known as philosophers. They carried on after he died, I think his daughter was that. And 800 years later, still, 800 years later, there was a list of all of the important Pythagoreans. Over the last 800 years, since Pythagoras, there was maybe a list of about 200 people named, a man named Gavin was put together. And there were 17 female names on that list. And we're talking about a time, and then some of them were the daughters of those. We're talking about a time when women were not allowed to do anything, and therefore he was breaking one of the biggest taboos of all. Some people call them feminism law as a result. But, you know, when somebody does something that radical, it's probably a really good idea. Well, I figure it must be his mother. I think his mother must have to have it and must have loved herself. I've got this really sharp son. If I want to learn something, I'm going to send him out to learn, and he's going to come back and tell me what he loves. So that's what I think is behind this presentation, which I'm going to give you. I'm going to have a very couple from Egypt and Babylon after 10 years. Some say 4 years, some say 10 years, some say 5 years, really big. But let's say he's about 30 years old, so he's gone for 10 years. 7 months of class to talk to his mother about the ideas that he has, and you are his mother. And if you really can't do that, you send his father watching over his son. So, I want you, while you're listening to this, I want you to hear his enthusiasm and get this idea that things are going to change because of your son. I mean, you might start to get pretty proud of It's a little bit like, you send your son to college in Memphis, Tennessee, and then maybe you went to grad school at Babylon, New York. And then he came home afterwards, and he has these ideas. And you're sitting there very proud of listening to, he didn't do too bad in school, and then you start thinking, maybe he'll be known in about 100 years. Maybe his name will still be known, maybe then they'll know what's not anymore. But I don't want you to think of what really happens, because then you won't listen to anything I'll say. Your great paternal glory will be way beyond the day, you know, you can really concentrate on what I'm talking about. So, I want one last thing here on the children's life. The internet. in Samos in the 600 BC. I can't tell you how much that you sent me on. I don't think you'll ever know how good I'll always be because of it. Let me tell you about it. First, everybody in the latest, let's say hi. Haley, please, thank you for that. And you're all happy to have been with us for a little while. That's been so good. It's been right out of the heat. And yeah, I hope you heard that story. Egyptian priests, they were very, very tough. But you know, I had them. They kept me for 3 years doing different things. Restrictions on me, different food, that I was able to come in and join their club and so on and so forth, but they just kept making it very, very difficult. And I finally succeeded in one of the funniest, in fact, the most ironic ways. I can still picture it in my mind, and it was so funny because it was actually a cultural difference. They thought that I was doing something extraordinary, and I was just doing something that's not that difficult for a Greek man to do. One day they might have said, okay, we'll really let you into society, but we'll teach you our opinion. Mostly they were astronomical people, those were the only ones that were used, like most of the people who use this information. But I still really wanted to learn, and I wanted to get in there. So they told me, all I have to do is stand at midnight outside the temple door, me. And if I'm going to do that, they'll let me in. I said, no problem. I didn't say it. I said, oh, I'll poke him. So I said, midnight. And, you know, they didn't open the door. So 1 o'clock in the morning, I was still standing there. They didn't open the door. 3 o'clock in the morning, didn't open the door. 6 o'clock in the morning, didn't open the door. The sun started to go. People started to go to work. I was standing there. And people started laughing. Then they started throwing things at me. I just stood there. They don't go. They live in caves. We don't do this all the time. So they got very excited when I just kept standing there and all the people were making demands. So they opened the door, they pulled me in, and that's how I got there. And I thought all those other things I tried to put my fire, that was not the worst thing they could have put me in. So I tell you that, and I want to tell you, I can't tell you all the stories about that. That one was me, but I want to tell you about what I just heard. What really did was music. I was listening to some music in the shop that day, and I noticed a little white light maker. And I was watching, and I noticed that the string would vibrate under certain circumstances, a different string would vibrate. And I was looking at it, and I suddenly noticed that I started to measure, and I noticed that when a string is exactly quite controlled, it makes a vibration. And then there are other relationships that I figured out over time. 3-2 created a certain diatonic, 4-3 created a diatonic. And I thought, you know, if we use mathematics and numbers to create music, we might make a totally different kind of music. So that was really exciting. And I thought, this is very interesting that numbers make such a big difference. And then there's an old thing in PE. They have quite triangles to try to figure out exactly how much space is going to take and so on. And they have the squares were set up like this. On the right triangle, you can find that the number of squares for two sides always equals the other side. But they didn't have anything to do that back, but they didn't have any way of doing it. And I figured out a way of proving that would always be true. It's a squared plus b squared equals c squared, but you know, not a pleasant place. You might not like it. So, some people don't really get too excited about it, but it's really interesting because I'll tell you about it. Because it makes numbers real. The numbers are behind everything. In fact, I think all is number. All is number. I don't know how to explain that to you, but everything has magnetic behind it. Everything has some kind of order behind it. As a matter of fact, you know, I did the study of Babylon of the earth and the sun. And you know, everybody thinks the earth is kind of flat, or they don't really know what shape it is, but everything else we see is a sphere. The sun is a sphere, and the moon is a sphere. But I did some studies. Don't really have a clear idea about some things about it, but it looks to me like maybe the earth might also be a sphere. And another thing I'm thinking about, I know you're not interested in that one. But you know, let me talk about the bigger idea. The bigger idea is that there might be harmony in the way that all these planets go around each other. And maybe they go around for fun, but that's an idea that nobody can demonstrate right now. So, but there's all these possible things that have to be mathematics, have to be physics, and they're harmony. You put the numbers in the right proportion, everything looks better. Have you ever, you know, you've drawn something and you have the proportions 2 to 3, and then 3 to 8, or 4 to 9,